Good morning, everybody. It's Friday, October 21st, 2016. I had a great time last night in Chillicothe with Lori Graves at the Dock. Great comedy show there. And it was a real triumph over the past for me because I had not had a good show the last time I was in Chillicothe. So I talk about that in the beginning of the episode. So you'll hear about that. But this episode is with the godmother of comedy in Chillicothe, Lori Graves. We talk about the whole situation there, so I don't feel like I need a whole lot of preview, but stay tuned for that. Real quick, tonight, me and my best good friend Jay Snyder and our other best black friend, Nate Washington, will be at Wiley's Comedy Joint, 101 Pine Street, Dayton, Ohio, 9 p.m. Tickets are two for $10. We did a BOGO right off the rip because we got it on short notice, and we hope people come out, and it's going to be a very eclectic show. We're going to live cast through part of it. We're going to do some video, live Facebooking, so watch out for us if you can't make it out. And thank you for your support, guys. This last week has been a huge week for downloads, and we're creeping back up, but you know, our weekly downloads are going way up. So I know some of you are going backwards and listening to old episodes. Thank you for that. Some of you are only hanging on for the new ones. Thank you for that. And some of you have come back from, you know, we took a little vacation, but with this episode, the third episode this week, or within a week, I should say. I can't say this week, but technically in the same calendar week. But we're almost right back on track with the time that we took off, and we're feeling motivated. I know Jay's, when Jay asks how the downloads are doing, I know he's ready to record. So that's a great feeling. And, you know, if you've been here from day one, you know that this podcast has taken on a lot of different forms. It's been a solo cast. It's been a rant cast. It's been an interview-driven podcast. And I'd like to keep people on their toes a little bit. When the best part of doing multiple episodes is, you know, if this isn't the episode for you, you can skip over it. Same with the last one, and there's still plenty of stuff to listen to. And I don't pretend to be curing any diseases with this podcast. This is entertainment, and I hope that it's at least slightly entertaining. I listened to a podcast last night, Joey Diaz, and at first I was thinking, like, this isn't very entertaining. But, you know, I was driving for 2 hours, and it was a continuous, linear conversation about a subject. And, you know, I stayed with it for a few minutes, and I realized this is exactly what I needed to be listening to as far as, like, a fruitful conversation. So I hope that I'm providing that for you guys. I hope that we are providing that for you guys. It looks like Jay is a permanent fixture, so we're going to, going into 2017, maybe sooner, not necessarily an official rebranding, but, you know, it'll be totally unrelated with Jay and Adrian or something like that. If you have any names, let us know. But I'd like to keep the name totally unrelated for now. And, well, we got lots of stuff planned, guys. And I'm hoping that within the next few weeks, you'll see a huge change once again in the quality and vigor. I said it with a V, of the quality of the cast, and we're gonna get some new guests, some bigger guests. I've had some celebrities on here, some people that you probably don't even realize are celebrities. That's how celebrity they are. They're incognito celebrities. But yeah, excited for tonight's show. Then I'm off. I'll be in Liberty the following week. I think that's confirmed. Just hosting, which is great because that gives me a chance to work on all my brand new stuff that I've been working on, which I did last night, and that was fun. Big shout out to all the Lauras. I think we have six Lauras that are regular listeners of the show, so thank you to all six of you. I don't even know how I begin to start to differentiate you except for the fact that I know three of you in person and three of you I've never met. So thank you to the six Lauras. And thank you to everybody else for the downloads. If you want to know, the easiest way to get this podcast is to download the Podbean app and search for Totally Unrelated. Follow. If you're already following it, then it should automatically sync up when you log in. And yeah, that's how you get it on your phone. And then you'll get all the episodes downloaded straight to your phone as they come out before I... Sometimes the episodes have been out for a day before I post about it online because I'm trying to track... where the listeners are coming from in a very real time sense. But that's the easiest way. That way you'll always be totally up to date. The other way is to get iTunes or Stitcher, and you can subscribe through there. And there's about 30 other different popular podcast aggregators that you download all the podcasts and you can listen that way too. My personal preference is the Podbean, because then you can like, comment, or follow, and it comes straight to me and I get to see that, and that helps with our rankings, which I believe we are now in fifth from last place. So thank you for all of your support. It's going to be truly amazing if we grow this thing to the level that I would like to see, which would be, you know, in the 100,000 range. So you guys are in at the ground level. Thank you so much. But it's going to be up to you whether or not we reach the heights of fame. To be honest, I'd settle for 1/10 of that. But 1/100 of that, I think, is more realistic for now. Enjoy Lori Graves, guys. She's the godmother of Chillicothe comedy. If you're in and around Chillicothe, if you're like in no man's land and you're like, how do I get started doing this damn comedy thing? You want to find a fairy godmother like Lori Graves, who has single-handedly brought comedy to a town of 22,000 people that's geographically isolated from any other major metropolitan area. She's a saint. And we should all pray for her absolution. I don't even know what that means. Things where I hadn't, I don't think I've been back here since, I did at the Vault, I did a show there, and between you and me, I had a mini meltdown on stage there. I didn't like lose it, but it was a situation where it was the first time I'd encountered like this desire to
What are you doing? Oh, we're filming our video, this part, recording this podcast.
It's all audio though, so you're now a celebrity. You've been indoctrinated.
Okay. You've been.
I was making sure that door was locked.
Yeah, it's just us. We're back here for a few minutes. We're
okay.
I'm not gonna steal chairs or nothing.
Can we smoke back here? Meth?
No,
just meth though.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, all right. I was just asking for a friend. Yeah, I had like a mini meltdown on stage where I was like, I didn't want to do my material. For people, it was a lot of comics in the crowd, and I was like, I've all heard this before. And I started to feel that sensation creep in tonight, but then I just let it go. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do the new stuff that I wanna work on. I'm gonna do the jokes that I know. And that was so much fun. This is like what you've got here. Like, even like for the earlier comics, they could really get a sense of what they were working on, even with like the bar noise and stuff like that. There was 80% of the place was paying attention to the comics. It was.
Yeah, and I know that's rare for bar shows.
Right, very rare.
Which is why I love bringing comics like you, like out of town, people that like actually tour and do clubs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this because I have one person, Dennis Piper, did a show a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like really nervous before the show. And not that Dennis was nervous about performing, but it was the crowd.
Yeah.
I'm like, Dennis, it'll be okay by the time you get up there.
You said that to me too. You were like, by the time you get up there.
The noise will weed out, and they know the people that are here still are for the other. But tonight was an exceptional crowd because this is like one of the best ones I've had at probably 6-8 months here, where the whole entire bar was actually here for comedy.
Yeah.
And usually I've got that fringe on the outside, their loud bachelorette party, whatever's going on.
Uh-huh.
But tonight when I said who's here for comedy and everybody like turned around and was like clapping, I'm like, oh, this gonna be a good show.
Yeah. When you went up and you did your thing, like from the one spot, it was crushing. And I was like, oh, what's... Well, the first thing I thought was, like, the first three guys ain't going to be able to follow this. And we saw a little bit of that, but they did okay. And it was structured just right. The lineup was done just right. And I appreciate you putting Joel on. I haven't seen him in maybe 2.5-3 years, and he was way funnier than the first time I saw him.
Actually, this is the first time I've met Joel in person.
Yeah.
We were, of course, Facebook friends, all are. And we've communicated, and he was going to come up last month and do it, but something happened. And I'm like, dude, just whatever. And I really wanted to get him on tonight, but I had so many.
Yeah.
And then when
it worked out perfect,
when a guy dropped out, and they're like, I'm like, I got a spot for him. And I said, I'm like, dude, you're up after John. Let's do this. And he's funny. Good guy. Yeah.
That was the perfect amount of comics for an open mic. Everyone seemed to stick to their time. And it almost didn't feel like an open mic. You know, it really felt like a show.
Yeah. I'm really proud of, I call my kids. I get more proud of them every month, like the locals around here, because their aspirations are not ours. They're not wanting to go on the road. Once a month, they like to bring their friends.
Right.
They like to stand and tell their jokes, and they're content with that. And I love it. And I love it when I have newbies. I love it when people, I've had so many people like, I want to try comedy. I'm like, you should.
Yeah.
If you want to do it one time. At least you won't regret not doing it.
It's amazing, because I think it's one of those situations where it's like, I would have tried comedy sooner, likely, had I had an opening or somebody that was
exactly.
like, you know, the comedy happens here. You know, and I remember the first, like, I didn't go see a live comedy show till I was like 30.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like, I always knew I wanted to do this.
I ran my open mic here in Chillicothe for a year before I'd ever been to a comedy club.
Yeah.
And I was doing The Clash.
Yeah.
If I entered that, and about a week before that, I thought, shit, I better go to a comedy club. And I knew Heather at Wiley's, who has ties to Chillicothe, and she said, Lori, I'll get you 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh. I walked into Wiley's, and I don't know what was going on. I met Nate Washington the first time. Uh-huh. I don't know what was going on, but the crowd was probably 80% black. And Wiley's. I walked in, and as a person, you know, new to comedy, I'm like, shit, black people are funnier than me. And I started freaking out.
Yeah.
And my buddy, I'm like, dude, what am I going to do? And he looked at me, and he's like, Lori, black people like to laugh too. And I said, but are they going to laugh at me? And I was, you know, panic stricken. And all I kept thinking up there, I'm like, I gotta crack the black. And I got up there, and as I'm taking the mic off the stand, this big, huge dude in the front row went, woo! And I turned around, I looked at him, I said, thank you, baby, but I knew I was good before I got up here.
Uh-huh.
And everybody got real quiet, and I said, I'm white, I got a big ass. And it worked. It went wrong, but it went right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, I can do this. And I relaxed, did my five, and that's how I met Jack Wilson. And you know,
that's similar to my first Wiley's experience, in that my first couple Wiley's experiences, where it was like my first joke was an observational kind of a riff that got me everything I needed to get through my set.
Yeah.
And but what I would say about like the urban audience or a black audience or whatever you want to call them, Negroes, whatever, I don't know what your word is, but they like more than anything a white person that's not afraid. You know what I mean? Or a white person that's comfortable in front of them. And I find that to be the number one secret. Because for me, I wasn't comfortable in front of black audiences. The first black show, like exclusively black show I ever did, was for Nate Washington at a rib joint in Dayton. And I went up, had a mediocre set, but I was really scared and pandery. And then I watched Corey Mintz go up and just do his regular set unapologetically and crush. And I was like, oh, that's all they want.
Yeah.
Is somebody to be authentic and real. And it's like, that's the conflict in me, is that I think there's sometimes where a white audience will have me shook. But more often than not, it's you know, like a 50-50 audience is my sweet spot.
That's my shit.
But that never happens. And so it's interesting when you get your wings, like you're like your first experience at Wiley's with like an urban audience, which most people would consider to be extra tough, and then you do that well. Did that propel your confidence for the next year or?
Sure, yeah. Well, what it did was it propelled me into The Clash.
And
I thought, well, if I can make it here, I can do well at the Dayton Funny Bone. I won that month.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to do this. And then my next set I did for somebody like 2 weeks after that, horribly bombed, which, you know, that always happens.
Right.
Yeah. Once you're at the mountain, you always hit the valley.
You've got to find that low spot.
And then I kind of swam my head back up and, you know, went on. But yeah, I was, because I'd only done comedy here for my friends.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, I know I can make my friends laugh, but can I make total strangers laugh?
Sure.
And that was my hurdle, was can I break out of this little thing I've created here for myself? And then that led me to meeting like you, Jonathan, everybody. And then when I started bringing you guys here, it was more of a pride thing. Like, hey, look who I met. these guys are fun. Look at my friends. I met these guys. They're funny, and they want to come here because they like me, and they want to come here.
Yeah.
And then Chillicothe has slowly just become a very welcoming comedy town as far as like tonight. I mean, people tonight, we'll be there tomorrow. You know, that's, I could do two back-to-back shows here and have two great crowds because they know I've brought you guys in town and they know I'm not bringing slouches. I'm not bringing them quality people. So it's a little different. I have a special thing here that I think that bigger cities don't have. And
you are geographically in a sweet spot in that the only other thing you could do here would be to open up a comedy club.
Yeah.
Of your own, you know, and even that, no guarantee that that's a success. It would have, like what, so like most of the shit I do on the road is like a place like this, but they do the comedy back here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people are having dinner out there or whatever, and then people come in here and they buy tickets for the show or they have dinner and then they come back here or whatever. But it's usually like in a back room of a place like this. And they, sometimes they go a long way to making it look like a comedy club.
Sure.
And they're usually devoted audiences, but, it's in those towns that are an hour and a half away from the next major thing to do.
Yes.
They'll drive out there for Titus. They'll drive out there for, you know, the big stars or whatever, but they want to do something in town. They don't want to have drinks and drive an hour and a half back home. That's what this, like, that's what I sensed tonight was people that were, had come out for real entertainment.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for people that are like, we'll try entertainment, versus the people that are like, no, we know it's gonna be entertaining.
Yeah.
And they pull it to them when they do it like that. So that's, and for you to have not fucked it up. Because that could have not been your fault. You know, it could have not been your fault that it got fucked up.
I mean, I started doing an open mic in Chillicothe in 2010. And I've been, with the exception of 3 months, I've had one.
So when did you do the Clash?
2011.
What month did you win?
March.
That's the month I started.
Really?
Comedy.
Yeah.
And so I remember I saw you in the finals that year. And so that was like John Craig, Nate
Kenny
Washington,
Carpenter,
Kenny Carpenter
area.
Won.
Yeah.
You got second though, right?
I got second, yeah.
And then who got third?
A guy that moved out to Seattle, Scott something.
That's right. I haven't seen him.
Guitar guy.
Yeah.
Music, I think he moved to Seattle or out Portland something, someplace out west. Yeah.
I knew I hadn't seen him since. And then, but I remember watching John and Nate, and those were the guys that I knew. And I remember thinking, like, they seem scared. But you went up, you did your fucking thing. Kenny did his fucking thing. But to be honest, I saw Kenny Carpenter perform when he weighed, you know, way more before he had the surgery.
Yeah,
and that was like 3 years earlier when I was first starting to think about doing comedy. He was at Wiley's at an open mic crushing. So when I saw him and I was like, I know this dude. I was like, there's no way he doesn't fucking win this in a walk. I mean, and so then afterwards, I had the biggest like awakening of my life after that contest. I saw him on the patio and I was like, hey man, congratulations for winning. And he was like, shit man, still gotta go to work tomorrow. I was like,
yeah,
but you won tonight. He's like, yeah man, but there should have been more people here. They were charging $5 a ticket. They should have charged $2. I was like, you won, man. I couldn't comprehend like having had that success and still being somewhat pessimistic about it. But when my time came and I was in the finals of the Clash and I didn't win, I got second. And I suddenly kind of got what he was saying.
Who won? You're here.
Chris Allen.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Which was like, yeah.
Yeah, Korea. Yeah.
It was like, and when some people were like, I don't think he should have won. I was like, did you see the show?
Yeah.
Because I was there.
Well, that's like, I had like 80 people in Chillicothe up there, and they were like, you should have won. I'm like, no, dude, Kenny killed me. The last joke killed me.
Yeah, the White Castle one?
Shit, mic dropped. And
yeah,
walked out.
That's
and
it.
I knew as soon as he said that, because before he did
no,
that.
No, it wasn't White, it was Subway. It was a
before
Subway
Before he
joke,
did yeah. that, I'm like, oh, I got a chance. And then when he did that, dropped the mic, looked at my friend, I'm like, oh, I think I probably just made a big place.
I think I just,
and But I just had Kenny here a couple months ago, and never had him here.
Oh, really?
And finally it worked out where I could bring him here. I brought him to Steiner's and I introduced him. I was like, you guys were at a little shit. I was in up in Dave. And I was like, this motherfucker beat me right here. And he was like, thanks, Lori. I really need that intro. But I mean, I love Kenny. Yeah, he's great. I think back to when I first went to Dayton and I met all of you guys. And that's why I tell people used to think I was from Dayton.
Yeah.
And I took that as a compliment that somebody's like, oh, you're a Dayton comic. And I would go, Yeah, I am. Yeah, because nobody knows the fuck Chill Coffee is. But I'm like, I'm from Dayton. And then after a while, after doing all this here, I could finally, after about 3 or 4 years, I finally felt comfortable of saying, no, I'm from Chill Coffee.
Yeah.
And I do this. And but it was because I met all you guys. You guys were all so nice to me and like welcoming. And
I'll tell you, when
you don't
first
get that
started,
in every city.
You don't. And it's. I will say this, that I imagine that it's similar to how it was in Dayton, in that when I started, I was like, I remember when I first got in with friends, because that's the first, like, you can't be successful at comedy if you don't know other comedians.
Yes.
And I remember asking John Craig and Chris Allen and these other guys, like, who was here before us? You know what I mean? It was like, there's no relics of I'm asking you, but you started like 6 months before me. You know what I mean? It's like, who's the guy that was here like 6 years? And those guys either go away or they don't. You know what I mean? They either stop doing comedy or they leave the area. And I remember just thinking like, well, who was here before us? So I think that what really happens is that every 3 to 4 years, and I think this is what killed the Clash, was that the competition got to a point where it was too stiff. And people didn't want to compete because they knew they weren't going to, they just like, I'm not going to compete against that guy.
Yeah.
And so, but when I first started doing the Clash, they were sold out every single show.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, people were like, I wanted to come, but the line was around that I couldn't get in. And I was like, really? And then by the time I got to the finals, like, my finals didn't sell out. And it was packed, but it wasn't like as packed as I remember some other shows being. But I think it's one of those situations where every 3 or 4 years, a group of comics comes along and they kind of congeal, which is how you ended up coming into the Dayton fold. Because if you had hit that stride somewhere like, say, Columbus, when it was a very welcoming community, you might have been identified as a Columbus comic. But I think that, like, if anybody had asked me, like, if I was like in California, and so I was like, do you know Lori Graves? I'd be like, yeah, she's a Dayton comic.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd be like, this guy's laughing. I'm like, I took pride, like, oh, yeah, I'm a Dayton comic, because I knew.
Nothing wrong
And
with
I
that.
Watched what all you guys were doing and how you guys were performing. And so when anybody anywhere was like, oh, you're from Dayton, I immediately went, yeah, yeah, I'm from Dayton. Yeah,
I take a lot of pride as being a Dayton comic and having that be my start. And I think it becomes, you know, with like Karen Jaffe, who was really good at kind of branding when I first started, of like, this is the Dayton comedy scene, and
yes,
we're welcoming, and we want people to do as much funny stuff as they can get their hands on, not just stand up, but improv and other things. And I think that had a lot of people when I started be like, oh, well, this is something I could do. Because I think that's all the real barrier is from comedy, from watching it to performing it, is like whether you want to or not, and then having access.
Yeah, and I guess I've always bragged about, you know, Dayton comedy. And I'll tell you, be honest, I mean, I've been in 6-7 years now, and I'm just now getting into Columbus.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's, and Cincinnati was in my second place I went, and a lot of those guys, but a lot of those guys aren't there now.
Yeah.
I started, and the females that started out when I was at, they're nowhere to be found. And
yeah.
Just the fact, I feel like I've survived. And
yeah, that's it's an attrition. It's a war of attrition.
And you just like, I think Jay Armstrong was the one that told me, he's like, if you've lasted 5 years, we know you're here to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, no, I mean, it is. I mean, you can't.
I've met more female comics that don't last as long as I would think that they could. But at that same ratio, it's like 1 to 5.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like one female comic for every 5 male comics.
Sure.
And then you see one female, I'd say probably 1 out of 3 female comics actually has it, whereas 1 in 20 male comics has it.
Yeah.
But the male comics, for whatever reason, will stick around. And I think part of it is that, I don't know if this is true, maybe you can speak to this, but I don't think women are doing comedy to get laid.
No.
And I think a lot of guys are.
Yeah.
As a way to like, well, peacocking, or just like these guys probably, which is like, it's just the wrong business to be in if what you want to do is performance to get you laid. Comedy is not the right business.
Learn guitar.
Exactly. You play a guitar at a fucking party.
Learn guitar, yeah. But yeah, I've always appreciated you guys. I appreciate you coming tonight. I've heard everybody talking about you and stuff, and everybody was like, that guy's so funny. And I realized, oh my God, I haven't had him here for a while.
It was because of that meltdown that I had like years ago. I never thought to ask because in a way it wasn't like to be perfectly honest, like, comedy's gonna be what it is. You know what I mean? I think the night that we were doing that, it was like near Halloween or something.
It was some crazy.
It wasn't well attended, but it was also one of those things where it was like, I didn't feel like I had to explain myself to Lori, because Lori knows.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Lori knows what the fuck's going on. Yeah. If it was like somebody who was like doesn't do comedy and just books it, they'd be like, that didn't seem like what I paid for. It's like, well, you gotta understand sometimes the comic view or whatever, but it was one of those things where it was a big lesson, and it was also like a springboard for me, because like after that I had to realize like, what is it that I'm up to? Is it just doing new material every time? Because if that's what you want to do, then you got to be ready to do it. You know, you can't just like have a couple ideas and then just go, I'm not that good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
some guys might be, and after 20 years, you might be that good. But it really kind of forced me to kind of evaluate what you're going to get paid for.
And I have a fear of that, a fear of not being prepared. Do you have that fear?
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, I'd like, you know, especially if you come to a crowded venue, like tonight, there's probably like 80 plus people here. And to not be prepared, even I'm just hosting, and I still am outside, like writing shit down. Like, what am I going to talk? I can't. You know.
I come up with more new stuff within the first 4 hours of a show that I'm nervous about. Like, that's when I really should be writing, because it's like, oh, I'll talk about this. And then I forget it as soon as I have the thought. But it's like, it just comes flooding in, and it's like a dopamine rush of almost like, hey, if you forget, it's almost like these guys keep coming up, I got a joke for you. You should use this tonight.
Hey.
You
I
never
know you
remember
hate this,
them.
But I got a joke for you.
Yeah.
Like, hey,
yeah. You probably
I'm
never
like,
heard
I can't
this one.
Use that. I had a guy tell me one time, I got a clean joke for you. And I'm like, I don't want it.
Yeah. What am I going to do with that?
Talk to that guy. I don't want that shit. No, I don't want that shit. But yeah, it's been, like I said, you know, it's a journey. It's been a big journey here. Been a big journey, you know, as far as.
Who do you have your eye on? Like, who's your, because you're in a position of being like the godmother of comedy. You know what I mean? That's really, so like. I'm not saying that you're out there asking people to kiss the ring.
Right.
But you have to have seen some people that you're like, this motherfucker owes me everything.
I don't really feel that way. I feel fortunate that you guys want to come here.
Yeah.
And the only thing that bothers me is in Chillicothe is like tonight, thank God, like I said, the one guy was like, he opened for Titus talking about you.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of made me feel good, because it finally, I think people are here finally clicking to the fact that I'm bringing them comics that they would have to pay good money to see at a club, and that they're fortunate that you're here.
Isn't that the folly of all new comics, that they don't really understand how? So, like, on one hand, that same guy's here and he's like, well, I just performed with this guy who's a professional.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's like he needs to do comedy for 2 or 3 more years before he realizes how far away he is from all of that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And I just like my crowd, though. I mean, like, you've kicked off 2 big months for me. You're my kickoff. I mean, within the next month and a half, I have Linda Bell coming, Stuart Huff, and Tom Dustin here at Chillicothe.
All except for one of those have been on the podcast and are all killer comics. I can attest to that. Even Stuart Huff, who I hope to have on the cast one day, he is a murderer.
But I mean, just for my point of view, me starting out here, town of 22,000, no comedy scene, took a chance, started an open mic, joined this contest in Dayton, happened to do well, meet you guys, and
so
then here.
So let me ask you this. At what point did you realize, like, what the fuck have I been doing with my life?
Quickly. I've always said I wanted to joke around, I wanted to do comedy, and I never thought I would get a chance.
Yeah.
And then I got the chance here.
And it just came flooding in.
I did a show at the theater. I emceed for my buddy's band. And he's like, you can try your comedy out. And I'm like, I ain't doing that. And then I did. My first time on stage is in front of 300 people. And I did 7 minutes. I probably had 30 seconds of material, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I remember going down in the dressing room in the theater, and I had my notebook, and I wrote, I did it. I still have the notebook. I wrote, I did it, and I underlined it and dated it. And I still have that notebook. I keep it. And I look back to that, and I thought, man, I started this at 37. What if I would have been 27?
Right.
But then I think, well, you wouldn't have had those 10 years of life experience.
Exactly.
To put behind you on stage.
Sure.
So I don't. Sometimes I think I regret not starting earlier, but then sometimes I'm like, no, I'm doing it right.
Only regret is if you don't get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
And I have very modest goals. I'm pretty much where I wanted to get. And so it's like anything else is extra.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things where it's like the first time I did it, I was very similar, almost to like, I can die happy now. Like, I did two open mics and then didn't do it again for another year and a half.
Really?
Yeah, because I was just like, my second open mic went horrible. And I was just like, well, I guess this isn't for me. But it was like, I kept writing, and I kept feeling that pull, and I had one person in my life keep asking me, when are you gonna go on stage again? When are you gonna go on stage again? Just one person who had never seen me, but he was a friend and a casual friend at the time. But if he hadn't kept asking me, I could have forgot about it. And then I did that improv class, and I met Karen and Dave Brinkman and Travis Clyburn and all these guys who were, Brock Schenk, all these guys that, like, I walked in and they were clearly talking about stand-up comedy. It was almost like going to a pedophile meeting and be like, I like kids. Do you guys like kids? Yeah. Like, yeah, we like kids. Come in, come in. That's what we're talking about right now is kids.
Did you kind of see the light and hear, oh?
Yeah.
I knew
at that moment, like, for the first time in my life, I didn't have to explain to a group of strangers what my problem was.
And that's what you guys were to me. When I met you guys at Dayton, I'm like, oh, they get me.
Yeah.
You
find your tribe.
You were there the night that I almost quit comedy at Jonathan's show at Julia's. I think.
I remember those shows.
Kenny Smith, was that his name?
Yeah, I know
headliner.
Kenny. Yeah.
Jonathan had me feature, which he shouldn't have, but I think he was being nice to me. But I remember they had advertised his open mic and Jonathan didn't know it, so all these people showed up
and then
went to show forever.
Yeah.
Like, you were there, Doug was there, Sean Lynch was there, all these, and everybody was pissed drunk until I got up there. These women in the front, one lady passed out at the table, her head was on the table. I just remember there was one guy in the back, this Cuban guy, and I kept talking to him and I called him Elion. I didn't know, I was so grasping for
Elion.
Fucking straws. And I remember you and Doug, when I got done, even Kenny was like, Lori, this is a rough room, don't worry about it. But I just remember sitting there during his set, like, just like, I've just got to get out of here, I mean, Sean went to the car and smoked. I'm like, I drove 45 minutes to Carla Goldbush's house, knocked on her door, was crying, and she's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, I'm quitting, I'm never doing this again. And she's like, come on in. And I remember Jonathan texts me like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm not doing comedy anymore. And I don't think I did anything for like a month after that because I was so shocked. I'd never really had that
rock bottom.
I'm like, what do you do? But it was a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you got jumped back because you guys were all like, just do it again. It happens to all of us.
Yeah,
like,
back on the horse.
But you know, when you're new, you just don't,
you don't know how low, like, and I'm sure that's not been the worst that you've ever had. It's one of those things where it's like, when I go into a show, I always say, and this is really hippy dippy of me, but I say things like, I'd like to create a clearing for this to be the best show I've ever had in my life. And if it's not, if it's the worst show I've ever had in my life, I'm gonna record it because that would also be awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and so anything in between that is just reality. It's either the worst show you've ever had,
the
or the best show you've ever had, or it's just one of those shows that you've had in the middle.
It's one of those you go, I
can live with that. And that's the, what was crazy about tonight was like, it was like a triumph over the past. You know what I mean? Where it was like, the last time I was in Chillicothe, it didn't go the way I wanted it. In fact, the first time I was in Chillicothe was at this bar doing, I hosted, like kind of emceed a Battle of the Bands.
Oh, yeah, I got you guys,
Was fun, but it wasn't really comedy. You know what I mean? It's like once the music stopped, people wanted to talk. And so I had a good time hanging out. And I remember at the time being like, this is going on the resume. You know what I mean? It was like, I'm bona fide. This pays $25.
Yeah.
Okay.
Doing this, yeah.
And so it's like the opportunity that you've created from creating something from nothing. It reminds me of when I lived in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I started a poker club with my friend George. And we literally just wanted to play poker. And so we started a club. And it was room just like this. I mean, like spitting image of this where we had tables. And the first time we had a game, it was sold out. Like we couldn't play because everybody else wanted to play. And we were like, I guess we're in the business.
Yeah.
And so
we're
it was like,
it.
Yeah. It's like I never had to leave Wilmington. I was a professional poker purveyor, you know? And it was like, why would I need to go to a casino? Why do I need to go see what's happening in the city? It's like, I've got it right here. And that's kind of what you've created here in Chillicothe. And it's a beautiful thing because for every person that you bring here that's too big to play this city, you bring somebody here that you're almost breaking them. You know, like you're like, this guy's gonna be on the Tonight Show one day, you know? And these people get to see him and see the possibility of what they could do for themselves. that's powerful. You know what I mean? Even if it's not somebody that wants to be a comedian, but an actor or something, like, oh, I saw a guy on TV that came to my town?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what people, I laugh, because I mean, like I said, we're 22,000 people. This is a blue collar town. We got a lot, you know, we got a lot of
country. You got a giant
people.
Smokestack.
Yeah, I mean, we're a country middle class town. And, you know, and but just the fact that these people have hung in there with me all these years and they're still hanging in there. And I just, I mean, I'm doing 5 venues in here now. Who would have thought?
You guys,
that,
you should open a club.
Who would have thought that you could do comedy 5 nights a month in Chillicothe and have 40, 50, 60 people show up?
I know I didn't. I remember, like, specifically saying, Lori's gonna burn Chillicothe out, but at 22,000 people, that's kind of a good sized crowd. I mean, that's kind of a good picking audience, because how many people came out tonight that haven't been to a show yet?
There were a few.
Probably a few,
you
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're gonna go back tomorrow and be like, I saw a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, that's not always the case, but the more science you put behind it, you know, the more likely you're going to be able to recreate the same result.
Well, the other black folk in the crowd, the three,
the others.
She came to a show September 30th, had never been to a show, and she came to one of my new venue, the first night we had it. It was Chris Seymour, Wendy, and Carla. And she's been to every show since. She asked me at night, she's like, my divorce hearing's tomorrow. What are you doing tomorrow night? And I said, Jerry's West. And she's like, we will be there.
We will be
like,
there.
Yeah, and she brings somebody new every time.
That's awesome.
And those are the people that, you know, but like I said, I couldn't really do any of this without Chillicothe, without you guys coming here and helping me. I mean, it's just been the fact that you guys are willing to drive for an hour plus to come here to entertain these people. And, you know, you could probably make more at the club in Dayton or whatever, but you choose to come here.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a
great thing. It's a mutual thing we have.
It's a slippery spot, and I know Jay's going through it too right now, where we get these gigs sometimes where we're like, yes, no, I'd love to do that. And then you get something like really short notice that pays 6 times as much for a week's worth of work, where it's like, okay, like, and Jack Wilson told me, he was like, you always take a week of work over a one-nighter.
Sure.
He's like, if you have to cancel on somebody, he's like, you don't really take a one-nighter for a one-nighter, especially if it's in the same town. You know, he kind of like laid it out for me or whatever, but Joel and his wife had a show that they built, like, where I was going to headline or whatever, and then I got the tie this week.
Yeah.
So I had to cancel
that. You
can't
turn that down.
If I hadn't needed the money, I would have. I just would have been like, but I needed the money at that point. Like, I don't know if I've ever needed money as bad as I did that one weekend. It was almost like, this is perfect. But, they were super cool with it.
Yeah.
And then John Craig went up, who was like, I mean, like him, me headlining over him or him headlining over me, like that's a toss up. It's good. Whoever came to play that day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, so another guy went out there and they filled that spot. And I remember feeling so bad that I couldn't fulfill on that one thing. But then when he showed up tonight, I was like, well, let me see. And he actually did well, which I wasn't really expecting him to do as well as he did. I mean, I knew he's a comedian. He's been going nonstop. But I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
These guys are really doing the thing. And like the other guys that came from Dayton and other places, everyone really came to play tonight. And that's something that can hurt a show more than anything else, is where people come up and they don't respect how important this is.
And they're not prepared. They're half-assing.
They're not prepared. They're kind of half-assing it. They may not even know they're half-assing it. But I felt like everybody came tonight to really kind of show off their stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a show great. And that's what you've done here in Chillicothe. It's, I mean, if in 5 years you don't have a club here or haven't helped somebody start a club here, it might be a missed opportunity. I mean,
yeah, I've thought about it. I wonder if they could. I've thought about the town supporting it, and I've had people approach me like, "Hey,
it might have to be slightly different." You know what I mean? It might have to be like a like, you know, they have dinner theater and stuff like that.
Right, or I mean, even like a small, like a Joker's in Indy, like a small, you know, like a
side spot.
Yeah, a side spot. But I it might be able. You know, and I think it might be able to work. Of course, like the small, like one night shows. You know, you'd have to be careful with doing those, but
I always
want to keep comedy going here.
Yeah, and I think that you've got, I mean, you've obviously.
And like you said, we're like, you reached your goal. I've said to people before, you know, if I died tomorrow on my deathbed, I can look at someone and honestly say, I was a comedian. You know what I mean? I did comedy. Yeah. And I'm content. I mean, we all like to be bigger. Sure, we'd all like to be bigger.
It's not even that I was or I did. I am a comedian. You're going to die a comedian
but
no matter what you do.
I'm proud of what I've done here. And I dare anybody to say that they have done what I've done. You know, I mean, not to be bragging, but you rarely find somebody. I mean, there was nothing here.
Yeah, but that's the thing about comedy in that it's high on. People are like, it's a thankless job. Things are, you know, like whatever the job is, they always say it's a thankless job. Comedy is a very thankful job in that you're getting thanks every time you tell a good joke. They audibly thank you. But it's a job that's low on validation. The only validation you get really is from your peers or from people upstream. People down or underneath you can't really validate you. You know, they can say, nice job, I think you're funny. But if they're not doing what you do or have... be in a position to be like, I want you to do this for me now, then there's not a lot of validation. And so having a town that you've created a comedy scene in, that there wasn't one before, that's hugely validating. It's almost like one of those things where it's like, I get like dying happy. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like I could bring comedy to Yellow Springs. Comedy could happen in Yellow Springs, but they're going to go to the Funny Bone or Wiley's to see the real shit. You know what I mean? But here, you're actually creating a service. Like, the city should pay you because you're diffusing stress every time you have a show and people come out and see it and laugh.
And people are having a good time. Yeah, and like I said, it's a big picture thing of I've met comics that come here to help me. It's the venues that give me a budget where I have to charge a cover.
Yeah.
Every venue I have here in town gives me a budget so I can pay you guys and don't have to charge a cover.
Right.
And I learned that from bartending. $2 will keep somebody out of a bar.
For sure.
They walk up, but we're out of here. You know? So do you want to put out a little money up front and keep them in there? Or do you want to turn them away at the door? And all my venues here are more than happy to give me money to pay comics. This shit is free.
Yeah.
People are like, Stuart Huff show is free. Yeah. Tom Dustin show is going to be free. And Seymour was like, free? And I'm like, yeah, the venue's paying him. I don't have to.
Why would you fuck around?
I don't have to charge a cover. So, you know, and plus, like, where Tom and Stuart are going to be, which I'd love to bring you there too. It's my friend's bar, Steiner's, over here on Payne Street.
Yeah.
Probably holds 40 people.
Yeah.
It's tiny. I mean, it's like not even as big as this room.
Yeah.
But it's a great comedy room because everyone is right there in your face.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable. It's perfect.
And you're either doing it or you're not.
That's my favorite kind of room. When it's uncomfortable, the stage, you could step on a table.
I don't even put a spotlight up there. I got a PA and that's it. So you're on this little stage in the corner, you're by the door.
Yeah.
And it's make or break.
Yeah.
But it's a smart crowd there. Not that all my crowds aren't, you know, but it's a smart crowd there. It's a little bit smaller. Remember that Flock shit we did?
Yes. Oh, you were at the Flock?
Oh.
That was Vietnam.
That was awful.
That was fucking Vietnam for comedians. Carla came up to me and she was like, I was told I could do 10 minutes. I said, Carla, if you can last 10 minutes, you can do 10 minutes.
You do 10,
She got up there. She was like, all right, I'm Carla Britt. I was like, 4.5 minutes. I was like, that's what I thought.
I remember Nate Washington walking through the crowd going, shut up. I'm like, dude, you were fighting a losing battle here. It was horrible.
The only person that got any traction was Salim.
Yeah.
Who was the headliner. And he was like, that's because he incorporated the DJ and music and stuff like that. But the wisdom to have to do that was.
Was it Andre Clark on that too? I'm trying to think. I think
yeah, he was. Dre
him.
Clark was on
met
that.
Him, yeah.
Dre was on that. Nate. Kenny Carpenter was on it.
Yeah. I got on that show because
the
owner of the bar, his sister or whatever worked with my aunt. That's how I got on that show. I walked up there and I'm like, I don't even know how I got on this shit, but I'm staying. And I just remember I was doing a joke and the guy was standing next to me and I heard him go, I need your ID. Like the bouncer's like 2 feet away from me. And I'm like, he needs your ID.
That's the show that I built that stage for, Soapbox 1.0.
Really? Yeah.
That was, and it was because it was like, they're like, well, we're going to do a show at the Gulch. And I was like, in Yellow Springs.
And wasn't it supposed to be outside, but some...
They didn't get the permits to do it outside.
And things happened, and
It was like, and like, nobody got paid or anything. There was no promise of money or anything like that, but the fact that there was like, the bar was packed.
Yeah.
And nobody had any interest in paying attention to comedy.
No.
It was one of they had like two bartenders for
and
like
someone thought
people.
Dave Chappelle was there, and I'm like, that's not Dave
Chappelle.
That
was Nate's cousin who if anybody ever played up looking like somebody in their life.
I remember Carla was like, Dave Chappelle's here, and I looked around, like, that's not Dave Chappelle. And then I heard Nate go, that's my cousin.
Yeah. He even got on stage was like, man, listen, everybody, this is my cousin. I know he kind of looks like Dave Chappelle, but he is not Dave Chappelle. It was, we did a show, I've done three shows in Yellow Springs, The Flock. Then I did a show at the Art Center, me, Gabe Kia, and John Craig, and a girl from Yellow Springs who I didn't know. She was just like, she just showed up and she was like, yeah, so I was gonna see if I could do some time. And I was like, are you a comedian? She's like, I've done comedy before. And I was like, you're on. I was like, but you gotta go first. I was like, I'm gonna introduce you, then you're gonna go up, then I'm gonna come back up. She did great.
Yeah.
And we did it outside, which is something, you know, and like even Gabe was like, you never do a show outside. I was like, trust me, I think it's gonna work. We start the show, and like there's a death metal scream band like two blocks over, like, but for whatever reason, we had our speakers positioned just right. We had ours was like a block party. I mean, like even the cops were parked across the street, and people were just like standing in the street. I mean, it was like a ton of people sitting. It was, and then it was like, it kind of was like, I don't ever want to do a show here again, because that was like the best I could have ever hoped for.
Isn't it great when a disaster goes well, though?
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's almost like, those are the best shows, the ones where I'm like, this is gonna suck. And then you're like, oh no.
No.
This is fucking great.
We did this. This is great. Yeah, we did this, yeah.
And then I did one for Luke Capasso at the Spirited Goat Coffee, which was fun.
I did one for him there. I closed the show for him there, and it was really fun.
It was fun, but it was very intimate and kind of like very hippy dippy.
Yes, very, very.
Very like, like.
Well, when I was there, I had a gift of a family that came in.
Oh.
That worked out with my closing joke perfectly.
Nice.
It was like mom and dad and son and girlfriend. And there was like some family people there. And I was thinking, where are the pot-smoking hippies? I got families fucking sitting here. Where are my pot-smoking hippies? But it worked out. But that was a fun show. That was a fun show.
My show that I did there, my elementary school teacher showed up. And
light your turf, yeah.
And like the first girl I think I ever kissed, her parents showed up.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, so that was interesting.
Fun. That's fun.
And my sexual experience with this girl was so weird. Like I'll probably talk about it on the cast one day. So weird that like seeing her parents, I thought they were there to be like, we'd like to talk to you about the things that happened when you were in first grade with our daughter.
We'd like to talk to 9-year-old Adrian. Yeah. Could you bring him out? We'd like to talk to him.
Give me a second. I'll need some more beer. 9-year-old was an alcoholic. It's very, very, very problem. Well, thank you so much, Laurie. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
What do you have coming up here in Chillicothe?
I've got the Jerry Show tomorrow, one of my venues out in the west end of town. I got Paul Riccio and Dale Blomquist are on that show. Like I said, I have Stuart Huff coming in the first Monday of November. I've got Linda Belt coming in the 17th of November.
Friend of the show, Linda Belt.
Love Linda Belt. Snuck into her, and shout out to Cam O'Connor for switching dates. I had him booked the 17th. And he graciously took the December date here so Linda could have the November one.
Oh, very nice.
And then, like I said, I've got Tom Dustin that first Monday of December, and then I'll have Cam here, and I've got Jesse Nutt the 10th of December.
You're gonna kill him.
Yeah, I've got
people might have heart attacks.
You kicked off the kick and asked. This is my big hoorah of 2016 here. So.
Let it never be said that I do not kick the shit the fuck off, because it's what the fuck I do.
But thank you so much for coming. Everybody loved you.
Well, thank you for recording with me, and thank you for the show, and thank you for being a stand for people here in Chillicothe to be able to follow their fucking dreams.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what? The only other thing you could have done was maybe open a dirt bike track.
Maybe.
Or something like a NASCAR ring or something.
Yeah, NASCAR and PBR.
Listen, you're doing the right thing, Laurie. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.